Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 15th podcast I've recorded. I'm recording it in September of 2008, and the title is Passive Investing is the Most Emotional Investing Approach of All, Part 2. In Part 1, I described the purpose of this podcast, which is to give a little background on how I have become so radicalized on the question of passive investing. If you've listened to earlier podcasts, you know that I am highly critical of the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works, and that is the dominant model of understanding how stock investing works. So if that model is flawed, it means that most of the advice on how to invest your money that you have heard over the past 20 or 30 years is seriously off the mark. And I have become convinced over the first 6 years of discussions held in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities. These discussions are referred to as the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. I have become convinced during the course of that time that the passive investing model is just flawed right to the core. That the core idea of passive investing is the thing that you are passive about is your stock allocation. The core idea in this model is that there is no need to change your stock allocation when stock prices get out of control, as they have, of course, in recent years. And I think that idea is just flat out false. For a long-term buy and hold strategy to work, investors must change their stock allocations as the long-term value proposition of stocks changes. The goal should be not to keep your stock allocation constant. The goal should be to keep the risk-reward ratio constant. So each investor has a certain allocation that he should have to stocks, and there is no one magic allocation that applies for everyone. You have to look at your particular financial circumstances and your risk tolerance and things of that nature and choose the stock allocation that makes the most sense for you. But you cannot just stick with that stock allocation. As the price of stocks changes, as valuations get high or moderate or low, you need to make adjustments so that the risk-reward profile stays roughly constant. So I reject passive investing, and I advocate a new model of investing, of understanding how stock investing works, that I call rational investing. And I started out the first part of this, this title, by pointing out that I come on very strong about passive investing, and I worry at times that people hearing me for the first time may think I come off strident. And, I have to tell things, obviously, as I see them. But what has happened is that 6-7 years ago, I assumed passive investing must make sense, just as the vast majority of investors today assume it must make sense. What happened is that I learned through my own research that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong. And then I brought that information to a Motley Fool discussion board. And it's the reaction and the research that's been done in response to that reaction that has occurred since that has convinced me over time that the root problem with our understanding of how stocks work is our acceptance of this passive investing idea, which is just a horrible, horrible mistake. So when I was at my boys' Little League game the other night, I wrote down, between innings, 35 alarm bells. 35 things that sort of happened or ideas that occurred to me over the course of the 6 years that caused me to have greater and greater doubts about the passive investing model. And in part one of the podcast, I went through the first 8 alarm bells. And in part two, I hope to go through some more of them. The last of the alarm bells mentioned in part one was alarm bell number 8, where I mentioned the experts. I had mentioned how, you know, we had done research in the community, sensitivity studies showing that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid, and the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are the product of the passive investing model. You know, I had mentioned that common sense tells us that the long-term value proposition must change with changes in valuation levels. So common sense was a big persuader to me. The sensitivity studies done by John Walter Russell were a big persuader. And then the reactions I had seen among defenders of passive investing, defensiveness, anger, indifference, confusion, these sorts of things. So combined, all of these things caused me over time to have increasing doubts over the passive investing model. The 9th alarm bell is related to the 8th, but somewhat different. The 8th was that as I was beginning to have doubts, and this is way back in August, not beginning to have doubts, but I had reached a point where I had serious doubts. I was virtually sure that I wouldn't have referred to it at the time as the passive investing model being wrong. I would have just said the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong, the studies we use to plan our retirements today, that those were wrong. But in later years, I came to attribute this to the passive investing model. But I was looking for confirmation. I was virtually sure that I was right, that these studies were flawed. But you know, all of us like to have outside confirmation. And of course, this is a very big issue, saying that all of the retirement advice that we've heard for the past 20 or 30 years is wrong, or all of the investing advice we've heard for the past 20 or 30 years is wrong, is, you know, I was biting off more than I really want to bite off in saying that. So I was looking for confirmation from experts, people who have studied investing more than I have. And I found that first in August of 2002, when I read William Bernstein's book, The 4 Pillars of Investing. And Bernstein, in that book, points out the flaws of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies and does a calculation showing that they are wrong, that they got the safe withdrawal rate wrong by 2 full percentage points, meaning that there will be millions of busted retirements in years to come in the event that stocks perform in the future anything at all as they've always performed in the past. So that was the confirmation I'd been looking for. But alarm bell number 9, it's a really strange one, and it's taken me, I won't say that today I have fully come to terms with it, but it's taken me years to come to terms with it, even to a small extent. Alarm bell number 9 is the word games employed by the experts who are aware of the flaws of the passive investing model. When I read what Bernstein said about the safe withdrawal rate studies, I put up a post at the Motley Fool board, and the title was What Bernstein Says, and Bernstein is a respected figure in that community. And I did this with a reasonable amount of confidence that the entire controversy was now going to be laid to rest. You know, we had showed with the sensitivity studies that the old school safe withdrawal retirement studies were wrong. We had showed, you know, citing Bogle's book and common sense, that the studies had to be wrong, that the methodology used was analytically invalid. We had showed with the reaction of the people trying to defend the studies that they did not have any confidence in their position. And now, I had a big name expert, respected in the community, who actually went to the trouble to do the calculation right. Bernstein not only said that valuations affect long-term returns, And that, of course, means that the studies are wrong because the old school retirement studies do not include an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the date of retirement. But Bernstein went the next step. He didn't just say that the old school studies were wrong. He calculated the safe withdrawal rate accurately. And what he found is that these old school studies were saying that retirees with large stock portfolios could take out 4% of their portfolio every year and be sure that their retirement plans would survive. And Bernstein said, no. When you make the adjustment for valuation, the safe withdrawal rate is not 4%, it's 2%. So these studies were not a little bit off, they were wildly off. They were saying that for a retiree with a $1 million portfolio, the old school study said it was safe to take out $40,000 a year. The reality is, if that retiree stuck with his high stock allocation, it would only be safe for him to take $20,000 a year. So all of millions of retirees who had planned their retirements on these old school retirement studies were taking out double every year what the historical data says they could afford to take out. So, you know, how much more proof could you have? It's in black and white. It's on page 234 of Bernstein's book. And what I got instead of an end of the discussion, there were people, to be sure, who said, yes, this settles it. But the dogmatic defenders of the passive investing model had a very different reaction than what I expected. What they did was they went into word game mode. They searched their minds to come up with some bizarre way of interpreting what Bernstein said so that they wouldn't have to accept that he had said that the old school studies are wrong and that the old school studies got the safe withdrawal rate wrong by 2 full percentage points. And what they did was they looked at the language in in Bernstein's book, and they quoted it. And what Bernstein says is, I can't quote it directly, but I'll paraphrase it to make the point. Bernstein talks about how, you know, the old school studies say the number is 4%. He says, but they don't include valuations. If you include valuations, that would subtract 2%. He says, so the safe withdrawal rate may be as low as 2%. Now, the safe withdrawal rate is a mathematical calculation, and he did the calculation, and the answer he got was 2%. So the proper way to say that was the safe withdrawal rate is 2%. Not the safe withdrawal rate may be 2%. The safe withdrawal rate is 2%. It's a calculation. He did the calculation. So the defenders of the old school studies, the defenders of the passive investing model, jumped on this. They jumped on this, you know, little misuse of language and said, oh, he's not saying this, the old school studies are wrong. He's saying we don't know the future. Anything could happen in the future. Who knows? So in other words, is it safe? Is it safe to take 4% if the number you get when you calculate it accurately is 2%? Obviously not. But because he used this strange wording, he said, the safe withdrawal rate might be as low as 2%. Instead of saying it is 2%, the defenders of the passive investing model just say, well, what he said doesn't matter. Now, you know, these people are highly abusive posters on internet discussion boards. So a lot of people are going to be inclined to say, what difference does it make what they say? What difference does it make? It makes a difference because what they are saying is absurd. They're playing word games, and what is at stake here are millions of middle-class retirements. So it's a scandal what they're saying. But in their defense, you have to say Bernstein did use mighty strange language. The safe withdrawal rate is a mathematical calculation. Why the heck would someone who had calculated it properly use the phraseology he used? Bernstein knows how to say things clearly when he wants to say things clearly. Why did he say things this way? So, you know, that threw me for a loop. That amazed me. And what I have found in the time since is that Bernstein is not the only one who does this. Scott Burns, Dallas Morning News columnist, does this. Scott Burns quotes the old school studies regularly in his column. He's written three columns describing the new school research. And I've had extensive correspondence with Scott, you know, where he asked questions about the new school and, you know, back and forth. And so he wouldn't have written about the new school studies if he didn't see merit in them. Yet he continues to this day to cite the old school studies, which are wrong. And you can't believe both things. It's not physically possible to believe both that valuations do affect long-term returns and that valuations do not affect long-term returns. Either the new school studies right or the old school studies are right and the other's wrong. They can't both be right. But yet, Scott Burns writes columns about the new school and then the next week goes back to citing the old school. And I got into a discussion at one point, an email discussion with Scott on that question. And at the end of that discussion, Scott got, I think it'd be fair to say, there were flashes of anger. He said that I had added a new layer of understanding to the safe withdrawal rate topic, but he said your approach for dealing with it is, and these are Scott's words, this is a quote, catastrophically unproductive. And boy, if there are two words that tell the story of this podcast, that passive investing is the most emotional investing approach of all, those are the two words that do it. Scott says that my approach is catastrophically unproductive. What is my approach? What is he referring to? Well, I can't say precisely what he's referring to, but I have a pretty darn good idea. What Scott means is that I don't use word games like Bill Bernstein does and like Scott does and like some others do. When I determine that the old school studies get the number wrong, I say to people, the old school studies get the number wrong. I say these studies are wrong. They need to be replaced. They need to be corrected. That's what he means. That's what I do that's different than what he does. Because he's acknowledging that valuations affect long-term returns. He doesn't deny that. And in fact, Scott made the point that he's known about research showing that goes back decades. He's known for a long time that valuations affect long-term returns. So, what do you make of this? What it means is that it doesn't matter how much research we do or how much we find out. It doesn't matter, you know, we could send a team of a thousand of the best researchers in the world into a room and ask them to solve the problem of how to plan for our retirements, but it doesn't make any difference because if they come up with better ways of doing it, Scott, and I don't mean to pick on Scott, he's just one person, but Scott and all these other experts are going to tell them, don't tell people what you find, whatever you do. That would be catastrophically unproductive. You have to pretend. It's okay to mention in your book that the numbers are off by 2%, but then you need to use some sort of language so that all the people who want to believe that the studies that are wrong are right can go on believing that. You don't want to upset them. I think it's fair to say that that's what's going on here. And I just find that amazing. And given that the penalty for getting this wrong is suffering a bust at retirement, one of the worst life setbacks imaginable. So I just find it incredible. But how else can you explain that other than to say what these experts are saying is that investors today are intensely emotional, they're sensitive, they're vulnerable. They cannot bear to hear the realities of how stock investing really works. And why would that be? Why would people be so sensitive? Why would people be so vulnerable? They are vulnerable because millions of people have bought into this passive investing model. And the passive investing model is nonsense. And so If you state things clearly and directly, as I try to do, and you say the old school studies are wrong, you're going to make people go nuts. These people would have to admit that they were wrong, that they've engaged in bad strategies. And of course, if you point out that investors have engaged in bad strategies, the next thing is you have to point out that the experts who advised them to adopt those strategies also got it wrong. And that includes Scott Burns, obviously, and William Bernstein and so many others. And if we were dealing with some area of life endeavor other than investing, I just don't see that would be a big deal. Scott and Bill and all these others would be thrilled. I never understood why when Bill Bernstein discovered the flaws in the safe withdrawal rate studies and he put it in his book, why didn't he have a publicity campaign based around that? That would be the natural thing to do. I've written a book. I know how much work it takes. After writing a book, you want to get publicity. Why, if you knew that there were errors in these studies and that they were going to cause millions of failed retirements, would you not want to get the word out? Would you not? And Bill Bernstein has contacts at the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Why would he not call these contacts and get this written up? This makes no sense. But I believe the only way I can make sense out of it is to say that first of all, Bill knows that this is an intensely sensitive question, that people have been misled and people have misled themselves, and they cannot bear to hear the realities, and that Bill himself, to a large extent, is engaging in self-deception, that I don't think he fully grasps what he found. He found things of great importance, but he can't bear to say it, he can't bear to accept it, because Bill, too, has been influenced by the passive investing model, and Scott Burns has been influenced. So, alarm bell number nine, is probably the most important of all the alarm bells. That one, I marvel over. I think about it all the time, and I found lots of examples of it in the years that I've studied this. People think that investing research is scientific. There's nothing scientific about it. It can be. There are circumstances in which it's scientific, but most investing research is aimed not at learning things. It's aimed at rationalizing things people want to believe. In other words, emotions come first. Emotions come first, investors decide what they want to believe, and then researchers try to find a way of concocting a study to support what investors want to believe. And since the beginning of time, investors have always had a death wish. They've always wanted to invest heavily in stocks at times of high stock prices, when the value proposition is very, very, very poor. So what's happening today is that researchers are generating research supporting this emotional act of self-destruction. But that's not science. You know, that's science fiction. You know, it's rationalization. It has nothing to do with science. Science is a quest for truth. Science is a quest to understand the realities. And a scientist would not tell people what they want to hear. A scientist would tell people what is. The safe withdrawal rate is 2% at the top of the price bubble. So, alarm bell number 10 is also related to those last two. A lack of interest among investors to tying down the experts. Well, that's just the other side of the coin. The experts are being careful not to report the realities of stock investing as they understand them to the people that they advise, because they know that it will upset them. They know that many investors do not want to hear the realities. They want to live in a dream world, the dream world of passive investing. So many experts hold back from saying things plainly. They often will. If you go looking for the realities, if you go looking for accurate reports, you can find them. The experts will refer to things sort of buried in a speech or buried in an article, but then they will be careful to add this other verbiage so that those who feel more comfortable in the dreamland can continue living in the dreamland. But why? I reported on this at various discussion boards. And there are some community members who jumped on it, but why didn't everyone jump on it? You know, why wasn't it universal? Don't we all want accurate information on how to invest? And the answer is no. The answer is a definitive no. We do not all want accurate information on how to invest. I believe that most investors do want accurate information, but there is a group that very, very, very much does not want accurate information. And that group is 50 times more intense than the group that does. And the group that does is confused and uncertain. And when they hear these conflicting reports, they hear Bill Bernstein say two opposite things, that valuations do affect long-term returns, but that, you know, he doesn't know for sure what the safe withdrawal rate is, even though he's calculated it. When they hear that, they don't know what to make of it. That's my take. Many investors just don't know what to make of it. And so they go on, and they sort of drop it, and they go on. And what I think has made me different is I'm not in a position where I can just drop it and go on. I built that retire early board at Motley Fool. I built this thriving community, and these abusive posters came in and destroyed it. And I need to rebuild it. I need to rebuild a community where people can talk about these issues in peace, in a reasoned and civil way. And so I'm not at liberty to just drop the matter. And so I've tried to keep digging and finding out, you know, is it only Bernstein? Is it only Scott Burns? Are there others? And the answer is there are lots of others. There are lots of people doing the same thing. So I found a pattern that a lot of the big name experts know more than they let on. They don't give a fully straight story. They probably don't know it all. They don't know it all because they don't dig themselves. And many investors are perfectly happy with that situation. They don't want to push. I remember when I was going to appear at the Vanguard Diehards annual meeting. And John Bogle appears at the meeting. And Mel Lindauer got very upset that I would be able to ask John Bogle questions. And so there was this debate that went on. He changed the rules for attendance so that he could, quote-unquote, protect Bogle from my questioning. And there were a number of people who were far less abusive than Mel who made points along the lines of, you know, some of these people were friendly to me. I had friendly interactions with them on the board. And they'd say, Rob, you know, why John Bogle is such a nice man. You know, why do you have to be so mean to him? You know, that's pretty much what they were saying. And it's just amazing to me. I'm not mean to John Bogle. I love John Bogle. I say that all the time. John Bogle is one of the primary influences on the investing ideas that I put forward at my website. So the idea that I'm mean to him is just crazy talk. But when I discover John Bogle's made a mistake, I feel, first of all, I'm obligated to point it out to him. But not only because investors need to know about it, that my fellow community members need to know about John Bogle's mistakes, John Bogle needs to know about John Bogle's mistakes. Are there really people out there who think it is better for John Bogle if he doesn't know about the things he's gotten wrong? If you read the comments that were put forward at that Vanguard Diehards board when Mel was changing the rules for who could attend a meeting, you would come to the conclusion that there are people out there, and not just one or two, there are a good number of people out there who believe that it would be better for John Bogle not to discover his mistakes until, obviously, he's going to discover them when the people who listen to his advice face financial ruin. You know, obviously, it's all going to come out in the end, but there are people who feel that it's mean to John Bogle to point these things out, and I'm coming from a very different place. I think I just should leave it at that. If I make a mistake in anything I say on one of these podcasts, excuse me, or in anything that I write at my website and you discover it, please let me know. Please don't refrain from letting me know on grounds that you don't want to hurt Rob Bennett's feelings, okay? And I presume to this day that John Bogle feels the same way. It's impossible for me to believe otherwise. Alarm bell number 11. There are lots of informed non-experts. We think of expertise. We think of experts as people who know more than non-experts. In the investing field, now obviously in some cases that is so, but there are many cases in the investing field where that is not at all so. I know there's a fellow who posted at the Vanguard Diehards board. He's been banned because he posted honestly once too often for Mel Lindauer's happiness. But he was a very popular poster and a very intelligent poster. His name was Microlepsis. And they did a poll at the Vanguard Diehards board one time. They said, who is your favorite poster? And Microlepsis was way up there near the top. He was one of the most popular. And very smart guy. And he said some things. There are things I learned from him that I didn't know at the time. And, you know, that happens a lot. But in his case, that was particularly so. And, of course, I'm always grateful when people teach me something. And one of the things I remember him saying was that the defenders of passive investing, Lindauer and Taylor Larimore and others, would frequently refer to the academic research, and they would say, oh, the academic research supports passive investing, you know, all down the line. And he said, that's what makes our approach different. We have academic research on our side. The others, it's just guessing, you know. We have it proven. And Microlepsis would often make the point. He'd say, there's a lot of research saying passive investing is full of beans. You know, this has been discredited. The efficient market theory is considered a joke among many academics. And I thought he was overstating it at the time. But I've learned since that that's not so, that it's true. It's true what Microlepsis said. Now, you know, if you went out and counted the studies, there are a larger number of studies based on the efficient market theory than there are rejecting the efficient market theory, by far. But Microlepsis is quite right. As Scott Burns pointed out, there's been research going back decades now pointing out the holes in the efficient market theory and in the passive investing model of investing. So this isn't something new. And it's amazing that, you know, people like Taylor Larimore and Mel Lindauer could say on a public discussion board, you know, you would think if you're saying something in public, you could be checked on it, you could be called out on it. And they just say, oh, all the research supports us. And it's not true. But no, there aren't many people that call them on it. And of course, Microlepsis did call them on it, and that's why he's banned. If you call them on it, they have to suppress you. Because the fact is, on a discussion board, people can ask for proof, and Microlepsis can link and show them research that shows that what they're saying is not so. And so you have to suppress it. But just think about this. What are the odds that something like that could work? Would you dream of going to a discussion board and saying something that could be checked and presume that nobody would call you on it and do this day in and day out for years? I find it remarkable. But I've checked on the academic research and I found that Microlepsis is right. There are many people who have rejected the efficient market theory, and their rejection goes back a good number of years. It's not one or two people, and it's not only within the last 3 months or the last 6 months. That's amazing. It's amazing that, you know, you read a magazine, and somebody says, you know, should I lower my stock allocation? I'm getting worried about stocks. And they give these rote answers. Oh, no, stay with it for the long run. As if this were based on, if this is, as if this were fact. It's an opinion. There certainly are people who believe in passive investing. That is obviously so. But it's not, it's far, far, far from being scientific fact. There's a lot of evidence the other way. And of course, people should say that. Why wouldn't they say it? So The point here is, somebody like Microlepsis is better informed than most big-name experts you're going to run into. He's not better informed on every issue. You know, if one of the big-name experts focuses on some particular aspect, he's going to know his specialty better than Microlepsis, who is just a guy on a discussion board. But by doing a little research on his own, and by being willing to say openly what he found, Microlepsis jumped to the head of the class. That shouldn't be possible. The way it should work, if passive investing were not a highly emotional approach, is that the experts would be the ones who know the literature better than the non-experts. And it may be that they know it better. But in terms of what they will say publicly, the non-experts often have the edge. And it was not. I don't mean to say it was only Microlepsis who did this. There were 50 people at the Vanguard Diehards board who made comments along these lines, not consistently. But you'd hear that they were afraid. They clearly were afraid to say what they knew. And so what would happen is they would say it in one thread and they would be quiet for a few months so that the heat would not be on them, and they'd mention it somewhere else. But it was clear that there were many people who were a lot smarter than the people who portrayed themselves as being experts, or at least a lot better informed. Alarm bell number 12, the failure to act on abusive posting. I could talk about this for a long time. I probably shouldn't. I always get the feeling when I talk about abusive posting that, I rarely get feedback on it. People rarely respond to what I say, and that makes me feel that people don't like to hear it. I can't not refer to it because it's too big of a story. Abusive posting tells us something. As I mentioned in the earlier podcast, abusive posting tells us that the defenders of passive investing are defensive. Tells us that they don't believe they have a good case, or else they wouldn't engage in abusive posting. If they had confidence in their position, they would state it, and they would be confident that their position would prevail in the court of public opinion. You don't get that from defenders of passive investing. You get abusive posting. So that in itself tells us something. But aside from the fact, obviously it's a small percentage of the community engaging in abusive posting, 10% or 20%. But forget the abusive posters. How about the other 80%? The 80% that sits on its hands and does nothing when they see outrageously abusive posting going on all around them. What does that tell us? That tells us something, no? I've seen it all. You know, I've seen death threats. I've seen long-running smear campaigns. I've seen flat-out, deceptions, false statements. I've seen word games. I've seen ridicule. Everything you could see. And it's a small number engaging in that. But it's a large number tolerating it. Why do we tolerate it? Why? We have rules at every board I have posted at protecting the people trying to use the boards for constructive purposes from the abusive posters. John D. Craig was another very popular poster at the Vanguard Diehards board. And John D. Craig is his screen name, not his real name. And John said one time, this abusive posting is for the birds. He said, I bet that 90% of this community would like the abusive posters to just knock it off. And I'm sure he's right. So why doesn't that 90% speak up? And of course, the abusive posters notice this. They notice that the 90% doesn't speak up. They notice that what they do works. So they stick at it. But if the 90% spoke up and insisted that these people be removed, it would happen. But it doesn't. Now, what does that tell us about the passive investing model? I don't know exactly what it tells us. I think it tells us that the 90% are compromised. they believe themselves to some extent in passive investing. I think that's a big part of it. They're not willing to be abusive. They find that repulsive. But they're not willing to ask that for action to be taken against people who are stating viewpoints not that far from their own viewpoints on investing. So they're compromised. And secondly, I think they're intimidated. They're afraid to speak up. In part, they're just intimidated because these abusive posters are so nasty. But in part, they're intimidated because they don't really understand why and how passive investing is wrong. They're afraid. They're afraid to take these people on because they feel that these passive investors will cite these big words and they'll say, we've got studies, you know. And they'll come off as being smarter than they are. And I'm always skeptical of people that use big words and, you know, hide behind studies. Because to me, it's puffed up stuff. It doesn't impress me. If somebody is confident in his or her belief, he or she can state it clearly. That's my take. But the 80%, the 90% who don't like abusive posting, they're intimidated. And this, again, is a sign that passive investing is a highly emotional approach. Because why is there so much sensitivity? Why is it so taboo to call the passive investors on their nonsense, the passive investing advocates on their nonsense? Why is that taboo? Why are people afraid to do it? They're afraid to do it in part because these people are abusive, but in part also because the whole idea of passive investing is abusive. It really is. Think again what it is we are saying when we say we are going to invest passively. What we are saying is we're not going to look at the price of the stocks we buy. Do you see how abusive it would be to say, I am not going to look at the price of a car I buy, or if somebody were to tell you, you should not look at the price of a car you buy, you would be offended by that. Well, you should be offended when people do it when you're buying stocks. It's sort of a bullying idea. Before any abusive posting enters the picture, there's bullying. The idea that you should turn your brain off and not look at price, that in itself is a small act of intimidation. So passive investing is born in intimidation. And that comes across. It's not spoken. It comes across in an unspoken way. But when you get to a discussion board, people sort of know, yeah, I have my doubts. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't add up. But I'm going to keep my mouth shut. And that's a big problem. That's one of the reasons why passive investing has hung around for so long, when it should have been put to rest a long, long time ago, because there's this taboo about mentioning doubts that we have about it. Alarm bell number 13 is the ban on honest posting. Boy. It was, our discussions began in May of 2002. It was May of 2003. It was a full year later when Motley Fool banned honest posting on safe withdrawal rates at its website. And I didn't believe that was possible. I did not believe that was possible. Motley Fool has rules for people who participated in its discussion boards. They say that they will not tolerate, the rules are written very strongly, we will not tolerate abusive posting. It couldn't be worded any more strongly. And we had people engaging in the most vicious smear campaigns ever seen on the internet. And Motley Fool never did a thing. Never once. And ultimately, of course, this abusive posting destroyed their board, in which they have a business interest. And I wrote them, you know, I communicated with the site administrator. And I told them very early on, excuse me, very early on, I sent emails and I said, I had built this board. You know, I had years of my life at stake, invested in this. And I sent the guy an email saying, do you see what's happening to this board? Every week, our best posters are leaving. They can't tolerate the stink. Please do something to save this board that thousands of people built together. And, you know, the site administrator, I mean, he had, you know, he had a good heart, but he would say, he'd say, oh, Rob, you raise thoughtful points. You know, what a thoughtful email. And, oh, Rob, he said one time, it would be ideal if they would allow honest posting. Well, yeah, it would be ideal, wouldn't it? It would be ideal to allow honest posting on numbers that people use to plan their retirements. I certainly agree. That would be ideal. But never did they ban any of these people. Never did they suspend any of these people. And ultimately, they banned, you know, after the board had been pretty much destroyed, they banned honest posting on safe withdrawal rates. And that was their solution to the problem. They would allow the old school studies to be promoted still, and they're still promoted to this day. But they would not allow any discussion of the new school studies. They would not allow discussion of accurate studies because there was an author of one of the old school studies was present in that board community, and he would not tolerate it. And so they gave up management of their board to this individual. That's what they did. Why? I can't see into their heads, you know. I can't tell you precisely why. I think part of it, and it's happened at other places. It hasn't happened. You know, I told you I couldn't believe it happened at Motley Fool. Well, it then happened at other places. It happened at Morningstar. It happened at the Bogleheads Board. It happened at the Early Retirement Forum. It happened at Financial Wedbring Forum. It happened at the Scott Burns Board. He has a board. He banned me. I posted there on the Retirement Risk Evaluator, the new school safe withdrawal rate calculator. One of the goons came on and put up an abusive post. I notified Scott Burns, of this abusive post. I said, please remove it. And he banned me. And I obviously had not posted abusively. But he felt, if an abusive poster wants you gone, I have to do that, right? He's a defender of passive investing. I have to do that, right? I don't think he has to do it. I think he should allow honest posting. But he didn't. And so all of these places, why do they act this way? One, they have a business interest. And, you know, it's certainly fair to say that passive investing is more popular today than rational investing, you know, by 10 to 1. So if you wanted to be cynical, you could say it's just strictly a business decision. They're making money from people believing in passive investing, and people believe in passive investing become upset when the realities of what the historical data says are reported to them. And so they prefer not to allow questioning of passive investing. You could explain it that way. I think there's more to it. I think that's a factor, but you can counter that because the Motley Fool Retire Early Board was the most successful board in the history of that site. So that board was making money in the days when they allowed honest posting. And I have an article at my website at the Banned at Motley Fool section on community comments on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. You can read there how excited people were when we started discussing the realities of stock investing. People love this stuff. So they could have built the board even bigger had they simply gotten rid of the abusive posters, had they simply honored the promises they made to us in their, you know, in their posting rules. So I don't buy the idea that it's strictly a money thing. I think that's a factor. I think that put pressure on the site administrators. But I don't think it's solely that. I think part of it is that the site administrators themselves are probably have a belief either that passive investing works or that there's a lot to be said for passive investing at the very least. And so they are reluctant to take action, just as the community members are reluctant to take action against the abusive posters or are reluctant to speak up. Even the site administrators, whose job it is to speak up, are reluctant. That's how strong the taboo on questioning passive investing is. That's what we're really talking about in these podcasts. There's a taboo on questioning passive investing. And Rob Bennett broke that taboo. I put up a post on May 13th, 2002 saying, do valuations affect safe withdrawal rates? And I broke the taboo. I questioned passive investing. And that's what caused a nuclear explosion that continues to this day, over 6 years later. You can't question passive investing. Now, why? Not because passive investing has been scientifically proven. If it had been scientifically proven, you could question it without any problem. The reason you can't question it is people who advocate it pretend that it has been scientifically proven, but it all falls apart upon questioning. It's not science, it's emotion. So that's why you get a nuclear explosion when it's questioned. And I don't think the site administrator went through the mental process that I'm describing here. I don't think he sat down and said, oh, let me think about this. There's a taboo on questioning passive investing. This guy broke the taboo. I cannot allow. You know, he didn't go through all that. But instinctively, he feels the taboo. We all feel it. The experts feel it. Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and many, many, many others. They all feel it. And so they don't cross these lines. You know, Bill Bernstein, to his credit, went pretty far. He calculated the safe withdrawal rate accurately, but then he pulled back. Something inside him said, don't write that sentence in normal English, because if you write it in normal English, you're crossing a taboo and you're going to cause a nuclear explosion. Don't publicize this book. Don't tell people that. Don't get an article in the Wall Street Journal letting people know that their retirements are going to fail. Don't let people know you've discovered this. Keep it sort of quiet. He couldn't resist writing about it because he knows it's his job to understand this stuff and to share what he's learned with others. But he couldn't write about it clearly. He couldn't go quite that far. And that affects everybody. It affects the experts. It affects the people trying to defend passive investing. They go abusive. It affects the communities. They don't speak up about the abusive stuff. It affects the site administrators. They don't ban the abusive posters, no matter how abusive they get. Death threats aren't enough. You can't get more abusive than that. And we saw death threats at the Motley Fool board, and we did not see action. We did not see action taken against those people. Not even a suspension. Nothing. Not a warning. Nothing. I'm going to bring this to a close, and that means there will be a part three to passive investing is the most emotional investing approach of all. I'll quickly go through just a few more of these. Alarm bell number 14. The failure of defenders of passive investing to offer any reasoned arguments. Here's something I would advise you to do if you're not convinced. Say you're listening to this podcast and you say, well, Rob makes some good points. Maybe passive investing isn't the final answer, but all these people can't be wrong. And Rob's right. I mean, come on. All these big academics and these big name experts, they can't all be wrong. They say passive investing works. Rob Bennett can't be right. Say that that's what you're thinking. That's certainly I wouldn't call you unreasonable to think that. It's certainly a reasonable point of view. Just keep it simple. Go to somebody who believes in passive investing strongly and say, okay, what is passive investing? Passive investing tells us we should stay at the same stock allocation when prices go to extremely high levels, correct? And that is what it means. That's the thing you're being passive about. The thing you're being passive about is your stock allocation. If your stock allocation is 70%, when prices are moderate, your stock allocation stays 70% when stock prices climb to outrageously high levels. Ask this person, this advocate of passive investing, why do you recommend that? Why do you believe it's a good idea not to adjust your stock allocation in response to a change in the long-term value proposition of stocks? Stocks obviously can't provide the same value proposition when they're priced at the levels they've been priced at in recent years as they could if they were priced at reasonable levels, right? Am I right about that? Well, why should you not lower your stock allocation a bit? There is no answer to that question, I can assure you. I've studied this in great depth. And that should have been the first question. Before anyone put forward the passive investing model, they should have answered that question. Why are we proposing this? But there is no answer. What happened with passive investing is, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know what went into people's heads that caused them to put it forward. But what you see is people discuss secondary and tertiary considerations, but they never discuss the fundamental point of, is there any reason to believe that it's a good idea to fail to change your stock allocation? The intuitive thing to do would be to change your stock allocation, right? If stocks become highly dangerous, as they obviously become dangerous at high prices, well, the intuitive thing to do would be lower your stock allocation until the danger passes. But passive investors say not to do that. Why? Why do they say that? Now, you know, probably the answer they would give you is, well, I'm sure they would say you can't time the market, you know. That's what they would say. You can't time the market. But you can time the market. And it's not just that you can time the market. You must be able to time the market. The idea that the market cannot be successfully timed does not make sense. If you are saying you can't time the market and be sure of getting a good result in 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, then yes, that absolutely can happen, and I believe that's true. I don't believe short-term timing works. But if the value proposition of stocks is less at high prices, and it is, and I think pretty much everyone agrees with that, then how could it not be a good idea to time the market in a long-term sense? In other words, how could lowering your stock allocation at times when stocks are dangerous has to get the probabilities more on your side than staying with the same stock allocation? So the point here is, this alarm bell is, I discovered, you know, after thinking about this for a long time, that there were very, very basic questions that had never been answered. No one ever addresses this. I could not get Taylor Larimore to tell me why long-term timing doesn't work if I tried for 50 years. You know, he would put up this post where he would quote 6,000 people that say timing doesn't work, and I'd say, Taylor, they're all talking about short-term timing. Everybody knows short-term timing doesn't work. How about long-term timing? And he would not respond to the question. Because, and it, you know, he doesn't have an answer. There is no answer. Long-term timing works. The historical data is public information. If Taylor Larimore wanted to prove me wrong, he could go to the public information and show that long-term timing doesn't work. But of course, it's always worked. He can't show such a thing. So this shows me that passive investing is emotional. It's, again, it's not science. If it were science, people could answer these questions. But it's an emotional approach. Passive investing is the most emotional investing approach of all. I'll continue with these alarm bells in part 3 of this podcast title. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.